And Vanessa. Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Jason Obi. Listen, that was Jay-Z, public service announcement. This is a public service announcement that we are featuring the one and only Gloria Richardson today on Black History Bootcamp. Y'all, it's hot outside. This is a walking meditation where we are studying Black history and the people who came before us, who walked before us, who talked before us, who fought before us, who loved before us, who are giving us a blueprint for how to navigate this thing we call life. My name is Morgan Dixon. It's hot in South Carolina. It's a heat wave going across the country. Where you at, Vanessa?
I'm in Washington, D.C. It is, it's not only hot, but then it got this kind of overcast, so you can't see the sun, but the sun is still blazing through, like one of those days where the heat waves, is, you can see them in the air. It's like very, yes.
It's hot. It's hot. It's hot. It's hot. It's hot. It's hot, y'all. Be safe out there. I ain't got no water. It's hot out here. Welcome to Black History Bootcamp. This is day 19 of 21 days of pleasure, of principle, of history, sisterhood, of deep and wonderful conversation, of powerful, powerful organizing. Most grateful for the calls this season and for the text messages and for the Instagram posts and for people who are out there making the hard decisions in their life to prioritize their own care, their own self-love, their own desires. It is not easy. And I hope that there's one thing that one of us or somebody in history has said to you, or one of our guest speakers has said to you, that has given you exactly what you needed to do what is necessary in this moment in your life. And I'm just personally very grateful for this walk together. And I learned so much for today's episode. And I am super excited to share, Vanessa, with you. How you doing?
Sorry, I had already started walking and it's just like, I'm doing good. I'm feeling kind of slow today, but it's like one of those days where you don't always have to walk fast. So you, it's like, as long as you're like just moving, you can just move. So I'm just like, well, this is a sauntering type of day. And I even learned like a couple of days ago that the word saunter, it comes from the medieval times when people were making a pilgrimage to the Holy Land. And when they would pass the villages along the way, people would say to them, I'm not going to say it right, but it was something like Asa Saunter. And it meant, are you going to the Holy Land? And then people would say yes. And then that's how the word.
Yes,
saunter.
We are going to the Holy Land. Vanessa, the Holy Land of freedom and liberation.
Yes. So,
Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Hope. H to the OV. Listen, I played that song. If you're not listening live, you should be listening live and walking, because there's something powerful about walking, talking together with thousands of Black women at high noon if you're on the East Coast, in the morning time if you're on the West Coast, but all together at the same time, pounding a prayer with our feet together. So please, 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 if and when you have the opportunity to join us live, please do that. But the link is in the, just stop this podcast right now, go back and listen to Jay-Z, then come back to the podcast, because you need that energy, y'all. I'm going to tell you something.
You do.
Vanessa, hip-hop, this is going to be the bravest. Outside of Ain't Cynthia's telling us that Megar Evers should be number one choice, I don't think there's no hip-hop without Gloria Richardson.
Okay.
I love know that's brave. I know that's brave. But I'm telling you, I don't think there's no hip hop without James Brown. I don't think there's no James Brown without the Black Panther Party and the Black Liberation Movement. Because James Brown was like a barbershop quartet before he came out with I'm Black and I'm Proud.
And can I say why I love that we're even talking about this? I have to bring this in, sorry, just for this today, because I want knowledge. Yusuf Salem just was announced this morning that he was victorious in his Harlem seat for city council. And I don't know if you all have been following, but he was one of the Central Park Five. And so it's a huge deal that he's come. But it's a bigger deal that in 2012, Girl Trek had a little known challenge called the Battle Royale. And one of the winners of the Battle Royale was Yusuf's mom, Sharon Salon.
Yes. Yes.
And way back in 2012, she told me that she was like, my son is one of the Central Park Five. And she was like, yeah, we're fighting for justice. And like, so much, this was before the Ava DuVernay film, before any stuff like that long ago. This woman told me 11 years ago about her son, and she was overcoming cancer, a bunch of stuff. And she was walking in a battle royale. So I just want to uplift their entire family today, because look, we out here talk about James Brown. We talk about all of the liberation that's happening, and I was just like, oh wow, we're going to talk about this today on this day where Yusuf Salam was where he was voted in. So just shout out to Harlem, and shout out to the Central Park Five for surviving, and shout out to everybody who's done liberation, and definitely shout out to James Brown.
Yes, I love the story. And so I don't think there's no Black Panther Party without Stokely Carmichael saying Black is beautiful, I'm Black and I'm proud, and who later became Kwame Nkrumah. Not Kwame Nkrumah, that's the president of the country.
But what was it, Kwame?
Stokely Carmichael became, somebody text us. All right, so, Vanessa.
Mm-hmm.
And Stokely Carmichael went and learned radical liberation theory from the one and only Gloria Richardson. He went as a part of SNCC to Cambridge, to the Cambridge movement. It was the most radical thing that was happening.
Cambridge,
in the
Massachusetts?
Cambridge, Maryland, home of Harriet Tubman.
Oh,
Eastern Shore of Maryland.
Oh,
1 hour away from you.
Away
from you. On Ray Street.
Yes.
No, on Ray Street, Cambridge, Maryland, Eastern Shore. Site of the Underground Railroad, birthplace of the one and only Harriet Tubman, was a woman. Oh, there was a woman named Gloria Richardson. I just want you to imagine she had a stunningly beautiful face, high cheekbones, big eyes. She wore exclusively a uniform of high-waisted jeans and a white working shirt, button-up shirt, as because she is a worker, okay? A white button-up shirt and high-waisted jeans and these cute little
shoes. Yeah, sometimes we just need a uniform. It's just like we need a uniform.
She had this uniform. And funny story about that uniform, we will get to it, but when she was one of five women invited to sit on the stage at the March on Washington, because they had to invite her. They did not want to invite her. They had to invite her. One of the, a white council, a citizens council member said, we hated working with her, but we couldn't work without her. This is who we talk about with her high-waisted jeans on and her button-up shirt, her white shirt, her crisp white shirt, okay? They invited her. And here's something to know about this. When she sat on that stage as one of five women in this crowd of hundreds of thousands of people, one of the five women honored in the civil rights movement, they told her she needed to wear a dress. Vanessa, they told her, don't wear them jeans because it's too radical. Don't wear those jeans. So she said she compromised and she wore a jean skirt. She wore a Celtic skirt. Yes, I was just floored by that little tiny little fact. So let's back up.
I love
who was Gloria Richardson. Yeah. Some of you are like, I don't even ever heard that name in my life, Morgan. I don't even know who you're talking about. I don't even know where Cambridge, Maryland is. Ain't no way she's responsible for hip hop. What are you talking about? Let me tell you this story right here. Gloria Richardson was born in Baltimore. Okay, first of all y'all know who Gloria Richardson is. When you think about the pictures from the civil rights era, you know you have seen a picture with a National Guardsman with his gun drawn, bayonet on
which
is the stabber part, the stabber knife part on the end of the gun, on the end of it, and he got a woman yoked up with the gun barrel, and she's looking fiercer than anybody you ever looked before, and she got on her jeans and her white shirt, and she looked at it. That is Gloria Richardson. She became an icon of Black liberation, an icon of Black power, an icon of Black feminism, an icon of grassroots leadership. My God, it is not a coincidence that Malcolm X, in his speech to the grassroots, that's the name of the speech, mentions her exclusively by name. Who is Gloria Richardson? You say, who is Gloria Richardson, and how has she been written out of American history? I'm going to tell you why. First of all, she was born in Baltimore. And she was born, her mother was a part of the St. Clair family, okay? I think she was born in 1922, something like that. Y'all, this is a walking podcast. Fact checkers, get on it and check me, okay? And I can't see because I can't be looking at my notes on the phone. I'm out here walking. Listen, you got to trade off in life. But I remember. I remember. Y'all read the Wikipedia page, okay? But Gloria Richardson was born in Baltimore, Maryland, and that's just a hop, skip, and a jump away from Cambridge, Maryland, where Harriet Tubman was born and escaped, by the way. That's where she left from the Underground Railroad, went up to Philadelphia. That's where the Girl Trek team walked 100 miles in 5 days on the Underground Railroad from Cambridge, Maryland. There's some in the water there, Vanessa. There's some in the water. I got some personal stuff I need to tell you about. I think I need to move there. That's mostly what I need to tell you. But okay. So listen, I believe it. Everything happens for a reason. I like it too, right? You know that street where that sister invited us into that restaurant? That's Race Street. That's Race Street. It's going to come. Wow. It's going to come. Yeah, it's going to be important in a second. Okay. Her mom is from the famous St. Clair family. So she's born in Baltimore, but her mom is born to the famous St. Clair family. Now, the famous St. Clair family was the Black bourgeoisie. They were wealthy. They came from Cambridge, and they were grocery store owners in the Second Ward, which is the Black community in Cambridge. Cambridge was segregated along Race Street. It still is kind of segregated along Race Street, okay? And the white people lived on one side of Race Street, and the Black people lived on the other side of Race Street. In fact, I actually think that the Black people are buying the buildings on the other side, the white side of Race Street, just even in protest, but or in like semblance. But so she, her family were owned the grocery stores and the funeral home. You know, that's the rich people. The rich family is who owned the funeral home and the grocery stores. So they were the St. Clairs. But before that, and they were politicians in Cambridge. So I just want you to know this granddaughter comes from a legacy of activism. This ain't something that just sprung up. She comes from a legacy of activism, as do all of us on this line. Ain't no way you are alive if you don't come from a legacy of activism in America as a Black woman. There's no way you are alive. If somebody somewhere, somebody's auntie, somebody's grandma, somebody somewhere didn't say hail to the North, there's no way you're alive, by the way. So she too came from a legacy of activism. So her mom, St. Clair, her grandpa, St. Clair, they owned all the grocery stores. And so she had a great life growing up. She had a great life. And she was well educated, and she went to Howard. Well, what happened was her family during the Great Depression had to go back to Cambridge because they're just like, well, we know where our power base is in Baltimore, ain't kicking it. It's the Great Depression, So they moved back to Cambridge. So she then went back and spent formative time in Cambridge. Well, she ended up going to college, and guess where she went? Howard University. Where does all Black heroes go? Howard University. She went to Howard University. And she was at Howard in the 50s, late 40s and 50s, where all of the civil rights stuff started to spark. So I'm talking protests at drugstores, like Woolworth counters kind of stuff. And she, as a student, was involved in all of the civil rights activism at Howard. Well, she graduated Howard. She got married. She had two daughters, and one of her daughters was named Donna. She moved back to Cambridge because even as an educated Howard graduate during the Great Depression, she couldn't find no job. it was hard for her. So you imagine if you were uneducated, how hard it would have been. So she, oh my goodness, she went back to Cambridge and she started working at one of her family's pharmacies. Because, listen, that's what she had to do. So she went to go work at one of her family's pharmacies. Her daughter started coming of age. And at that time, in the late 50s, early 60s, the civil rights movement was on and popping. Well, SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, came to Cambridge. Just like the Welcome Walks, y'all, you got to have a regional strategy. They came to Cambridge and they said, we are looking for people to organize a movement with us. And they were looking for high school students, young people, because it was the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC. Okay. Shout out to Ella Baker. SNCC. Shout out to Diane Nash. So SNCC came to Cambridge, Maryland, opened up a chapter, and guess who joined? Donna's daughter. I mean, Donna, Gloria Richardson's daughter, Donna, she joined. So she started protesting. And one of the things they were protesting was, yes, the desegregation of schools. So after 1954, Brown versus Board of Education, that's just the law. But these local folks, these cowboys ain't trying to have your kids go to school with their kids. So we have to have a local organizing strategy to actually desegregate schools and force the hand of the states to apply the federal finding to at the state level, because there's something called sovereignty, state sovereignty. And so you had to force the hand and create case law at the state level, or create some kind of treaty or agreement at the state level to desegregate schools, because that was in Oklahoma, Brown versus School Board of Education. Okay. So she's like, no. Not only are we going to desegregate schools, but I don't really even care about desegregating schools as much as I care about us being able to live and thrive and have jobs and have access to health care.
Yeah.
Her uncle and her father died prematurely because they could not have access to hospitals. It was traumatizing to her. We talk about the grief of losing our father and our uncle, and we talk about the grief of injustice in this series. It radicalized her. So she was like, schools are cute. Schools are good. Yeah, we're going to jump on the bandwagon of voting rights and desegregating the schools because it's easy and it's palatable and people like beautiful Black children. But we want to desegregate the hospitals, and we want to desegregate the public institutions. And by the way, we want what you got over there.
We want government jobs.
We want state jobs. We want our neighborhoods to be resourced. She had a list of lifestyle radical systems change for justice and equality. Oh, no. The civil rights leaders down in the South did not like her creating her own agenda items. They was like, we got a script, lady, with your jeans on. We got a script. You got to follow this script.
And
it's desegregation now, okay? That's the script. Don't be talking about no jobs. Don't be talking about desegregating the state contracts and real estate. Don't be talking about real estate. What they didn't know is that it wasn't just her family two generations ago that were liberation activists. That she came from the hometown of Harriet Tubman, and that she was born of free Black people before the Civil War. Her family was free. And that in that radical cauldron of liberation called the Eastern Shore of Maryland, that there was such a richness of culture that came over from people living on those islands on the Eastern Shore of Maryland who had come from the Ashanti Kingdom in Ghana. There was such a liberatory ethos that whether you were owned or whether you were free, the Black people worked together and created the abolitionist movement. That's where Frederick Douglass came from. That's where Harriet Tubman came from. So, like, I'm telling y'all, there's something in the water on the Eastern Shore of Maryland. And it was close in proximity to the greatest seat of power, Washington, D.C. So who was in power then? John F. Kennedy. And Robert Kennedy could not stand Gloria Richardson. In fact, they was negotiating one time, like a 9-hour negotiation. John Lewis, everybody was there. And he looked at her and he said, "Do you ever smile?" She just looked like, fool.
Not that. Not being asked to smile. Not there, sir. Not there.
Robert Kennedy said this to this woman. Okay. So this is what happened, Vanessa. Her daughter got involved in SNCC as they were doing peaceful protests because it's the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. So her daughter in high school is doing peaceful protest. The white citizens of Cambridge, Maryland are responding to these babies with violence, with Molotov cocktails, with shooting into their organizing buildings, with shooting into their peaceful protests. I mean, actual head-on violence. Well, if her dad and her uncle dying because they couldn't go to the white hospitals was not enough to radicalize you, if somebody is throwing Molotov cocktails at your baby girl in high school because she's asking to get a fair education, it's on and popping. Button up the jeans, Vanessa. Button up the jeans. Today's pleasure principle is fear not. There comes a time, people. Yeah. When fear has no place at the table. There comes a time when your love for life requires you to take the boldest, scariest action that you have ever taken in your life. So before we finish this, I just want to ask you, Vanessa, what right now are you afraid of doing that you have to do to live your healthiest, most fulfilled life?
That's such a good question. Afraid of doing. I'm sometimes afraid of saying no. Fear of just like disappointing people or missing out or.
What will happen if you say no?
More specific. Yeah.
What do you think will happen if you say no?
Mm-hmm. Nothing bad, quite frankly. Like, maybe, you know, it's perceived.
And if you're perceived as being disagreeable, what do you think happens then?
Oh, yeah. All sorts of stuff. People start to shut you out. People start to make you doubt yourself, belittle yourself. There's all sorts of things. You start to not believe in yourself. You start to tell yourself the stories in your own mind.
And if you don't believe in yourself and people shut you out, what happens then?
You become angry.
And if you become angry, what happens?
I know for myself, there's a danger of just becoming like disillusioned and hardened and just discouraged in this way that you tap out or check out, or that you even become like self-destructive, or you can channel that back into something productive. You know, I think it depends.
Nope. Don't go back into that. I'm telling you what you're scared of. If you then tap out, what does that even look like for you if you just completely tap out and get disconnected?
Mm-hmm. I personally don't know. Because I haven't tapped out yet.
I ask you this because I feel like we are all at a position right now, well, where there are things in our lives that we have to say no to. We have to say no to fear in our lives. And I don't know what that is. I don't know if that's the fear of asking for a raise. I don't know if that's the fear of
being alone.
I don't know if it's the fear of getting married, leaving a marriage. I don't know if it's the fear of getting
everything
dream,
you ask for and nothing changing.
Getting everything. Yeah. I don't know what it is. But I know that we all have fear that we are going to have to confront immediately. From a systems perspective and a justice perspective, what do you think is killing our daughters? From a systems and a justice perspective. Like if you could snap your fingers and change one thing, what is actually killing our daughters?
I think their mothers are tired and that their mothers are unsupported and overwhelmed without resource. And so in the space of like just trying to raise themselves up, it's hard to have the capacity to then show up in these like extra spaces and extra ways for their kids.
I want to open up the phone lines.
Because they're not getting paid enough, don't have any time off, weren't educated into the jobs that the economy is now paying, and are consistently looked at to be the workhorses of this world in a way that we are typecast into roles and into responsibilities that just serve other people and don't serve us.
So we are in a position, almost a caste of servitude.
Yes.
So Black women being relegated to a labor market where we are in service of other people, underpaid and undervalued, is killing Black girls. I want to ask everybody listening to us, what is killing Black girls from a systems perspective? If we had to be brave, like Georgia Richardson, what are we fighting for? What are we fighting for? So what my question is what, from a systems perspective, is killing Black girls? What from a
star nine, if you want to raise your hand. Star nine, if you want
star
to raise
nine.
Your hand. You have something. Yes, star nine.
From a systems perspective.
What do you think, Morgan?
I want to reserve it and give people space to talk because I want to hear what people think. Okay. From a systems perspective, what is killing Black girls? Raise your hand, hit star nine, hit star nine. Let me finish up this story while we're going to open up those lines. So Vanessa, she went down to SNCC conference in Atlanta, and she said, yeah, I'm going to have to get involved. You're not just going to have my baby out here getting, you know, you're not just going to put our kids in these marches and put our kids, you know, she's now 40 years old, and she's just like, I'm going to have to get involved. She's middle-aged. I don't know if she's 40. I'm 40, so I'm imagining she's like, her baby's in high school. She's something like that. So she's a grown Black woman, and she goes down to the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, their big conference, and getting all the press and everything. And she goes, yeah, we're going to have to start something in Cambridge that is for people like me to get involved. So she started the Cambridge Nonviolent Action Committee. The Cambridge Nonviolence Action. She got a thumbs up from, you know, from SNCC, probably Ella Baker, right? So she got a thumbs up from SNCC. So, by the way, she talked to Dr. King too and said, we need help in Cambridge. They're bombing our kids. And he did not agree to come and help her. He said that he had to stay focused and stay on the strategy. So she was like, bet I'll do it. So she comes back up to Maryland, and she starts something called the Cambridge Movement that was really led by the Cambridge Nonviolent Action Committee. And she got involved, Vanessa. And here's the thing about her. When it came to life or death and it came to protecting her daughter, she didn't believe that when people attack you, you should be nonviolent back to them.
Yeah. Like Rosa Parks.
She didn't believe that when people attack your children physically and shoot at them and throw Molotov cocktails at them, that you should be nonviolent back to them. So what happened is they started protesting. They started boycotting businesses because Cambridge was still, you know, a large percentage of Black people. So their boycotts were very effective. They started boycotting businesses. They started staging protests. They started community activism. And they were met with outright violence. Violence. It erupted, and they fought back. She was on the front lines of fighting back. And that was the first time. I mean, Malcolm X was up in the streets talking about it. Martin Luther King was down there practicing nonviolence and getting hosed with the kids at the Children's March. Cambridge, Maryland was the first time that a community of people fought back during the civil rights movement. They fought back. It was men and women who were rugged, who knew how to live on their own, who knew how to, you know, till the oil, who were strong. And those men would not have it. They would not have it. They protected her. They lined up rank and file. They followed her leadership. In fact, she was the only woman that was in that senior level of position for an entire kind of movement, right? Most people were like the secretary or the field secretary or this or that or this. And so you had her, you had Daisy Bates, you had Fannie Lou Hamer, you had Ella Baker. She's had a lot of lead, or not a lot, you had a handful of leaders that we know about, but she took no orders from no one in the establishment. She was the top of the pecking order. Gloria Richardson in the Cambridge movement in Maryland, and men, women, children, I mean, there's a picture of her and Stokely Carmichael getting released from jail, and she had on her jeans and her white shirt. That's what I'm saying. She was high ranking. And the fact that she chose to fight back was a riff, a huge riff for people like A. Philip Randolph, for people like Martin Luther King, for people like Ralph Abernathy. The Southern Christian Leadership Conference, they were like, oh, no. She was younger than them. She was a woman. She was beautiful. She was radical. She had come from a family of free people for 2, 3, 4, 5 generations back to Africa. She had money, didn't need to ask for no money, and she was mad. And she was a mother. And they were bombing her daughter. So Vanessa, Cambridge, Maryland erupted into riots. Riots. So much to where Robert Kennedy had to send the National Guard into Cambridge. They came into Cambridge and they thought they had squelled the violence. It was outright a street fight. And she was in the middle of it. They thought
How does Robert Kennedy ask a woman whose daughter is getting bombed, does she ever smile? It's just like, what?
Vanessa, they tried to, the National Guard tried to leave. As soon as they left, the riots came back. I mean, shooting guns back. You got guns? We got guns. You want Molotov? We got Molotov cocktails. I mean, before the Black Panther Party, there was a straight street fight for justice and equality in Cambridge, led by Gloria Richardson. So much of that 30,000 National Guardsmen had to come back. And they stayed for the longest occupation of any city in American history. For a year, the National Guard stayed. Because it was hot. Them white folks was already pissed off about Harriet Tubman.
Right.
They was already pissed off. I'm not kidding you. That was only three generations before. They was already pissed off that Harriet Tubman done come up there, stole all their people, embarrassed them in front of the nation, right under the seat of power in Washington, D.C., done scurried off, made a fool out of all of them, and people write movies about it now. That's what I'm saying. They was already mad. They was already mad. So they gave her hell. Like you said, give them hell yesterday. They gave her hell. She gave it right back to them. Gloria Richardson gave it right back to them. And she became so popular that actually Malcolm X, in that speech, if you listen to the grassroots, that speech, and he goes, he's talking about Dr. King and all of them and how they are on the wrong track and how they have integrated all of these like preachers and pastors and white people who are now like taking over their movement and steering it in directions that is not going to truly liberate Black people. He goes, but the people know what they need, and the people know what they want, and local organizing by people like Gloria Richardson will save the Black community, will liberate the Black community. And then the whole crowd started cheering for her. She was so popular. And he said, because, you know, she had to go to the March on Washington because she's like, look, this is a power move. I'm going to go. Apparently, Malcolm X was there. Apparently, Malcolm X was in who's Ruby Dee's husband? Ozzie Davis's room at the March on Washington. And he was like, Ozzie, if y'all need me to come out, let me know. But I'm going to go ahead and stay right here because these people on this stage, is not what we do it. But she met Malcolm X in Detroit, and he told her he's coming to Cambridge, but he has to go to Africa. Now, when he went to Africa, he met up with Maya Angelou. I don't know if you remember this. It's so juicy, this part of history, okay? He met up with Maya Angelou, who was in Ghana, right? But he was like, you should come to Africa with me. He said, because last time I was in Africa, they knew who you were, Gloria Richardson. They supported your Cambridge movement. They thought that you were the bravest one in America. They thought you were the bravest one in America. That's what people on the continent were saying about Gloria Richardson, according to Malcolm X. Y'all. So the story, they tried to write some proposals and negotiations and some treaties and stuff. She was like, no. Nah. She said, you're not going to give human rights to people who are already free. What you think you're doing?
Right.
She said that. She was like, we don't need your dignity. We have dignity. We need contracts. We need jobs. We need buildings.
We need
land. Yeah. And so that's what she said. And that's why Robert Kennedy could not stand working with her, because all this like placating, all these treaties and legislation. No, 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 no. This is what we need. And she would not back down. John Lewis writes about it in his book. He was in the meeting with her, John Lewis, and he was like, she would not back down. Hours of negotiation. So they eventually made the Cambridge Treaty, gave almost everything that she wanted, because what are they going to do? She's like, we're going to burn this whole thing down. And we won city, and you saw what Harriet Tubman did to destabilize this whole country. We're going to burn this whole thing down. So he was like, we're going to go ahead and write this Cambridge Treaty. Wrote the Cambridge Treaty. And here it goes. I mean, international news. Everybody's there listening to her. She got that famous, they tried to yoke her up, stop the march. She came all up on the gun. She was like, what you going to do? What you going to do? The man was like, somebody have to shoot you. She was like, do it now. She was like, do it. Do it. So then she's like, you're not going to stop these activists. They march out. They went out. They got what they needed. The whole world, camera crews is there. That's when Dr. King called. Dr. King was like, you need me to come now. She was like, bet we got this, Dr. King. We don't actually need you to come right now. And rest in peace, Dr. King. You know I love Dr. King. You know I love Dr. King. I was like, Dr. King.
She was like, I called you last week. This week. This week.
Yes, but this was not a Dr. King thing. First of all, Dr. King was 26 when he first started Master and Ed Dexter. Let's just keep that in mind. Think about everybody you know who 26.
Yeah.
Let's just keep that in mind. And then let's just keep in mind our grandpas and how our grandpas pat us on the top of the head and be like, hi, little girl, how you doing? It was a different generation. If they mad at her for wearing jeans, it was a different generation. So let's cut some slack and let's put this thing into context. So she started working with union organizers, Vanessa, white and black union organizers. You know that's when it gets dangerous. She started working with the labor. They said that she was the most rebellious woman. They said that she was the general of the civil rights movement. They called her the general of the civil rights movement. Oh my God, y'all. Gloria Richardson, if you don't remember no other name of this series, please remember her. The general of the civil rights movement. I want you to hear from her daughters, and then we're going to open up the line. There's a clip I want you to hear from her daughters.
Okay.
It's her daughter and her granddaughter.
We had a lot of very scary experiences.
Donna Richardson Orange describes turbulent times growing up in Cambridge, Maryland in the early 1960s.
The demonstrations and the violence brought the Maryland National Guard here in force to maintain order.
You could pick up our phone at home and hear the police station because they were tapping the phone.
It was part of living with her mother, Gloria Richardson, who became one of the greatest civil rights heroines in American history. In this 1963 photo, Richardson is seen pushing away a Maryland National Guardsman's bayonet after Governor J. Miller Taws sent in troops to help keep the peace.
I don't think I've ever seen her intimidated about anything.
The desegregation campaign was organized by the so-called Cambridge Nonviolent Action Committee.
Richardson, members of the Cambridge Nonviolent Action Committee, and their supporters endured threats and arrests as they protested racial discrimination, activism that led Richardson to Washington and beyond.
The militant.
Granddaughter Tia Young says Richardson was passionate and unapologetic.
The Lady General. She really understood that it was okay to make people uncomfortable. And, you know, that means you're doing something.
It's okay to make people feel uncomfortable, Vanessa.
That means you're doing something. As all of the news cameras came out and she became the general, and young people like Stokely Carmichael, who went on to be pivotal in the Black Panther Party, and she created a new model for no justice, no peace, a new model for an eye for an eye. She showed everything that Malcolm X was talking about in real time, and she inspired the next generation of people like Stokely Carmichael, who would then become the manifesto for the Black Panther Party, who would then inspire people like James Brown and pop culture people to say, I'm Black and I'm proud and I won't stand down. I don't know karate, but I know crazy. That's what and then who would then inspire an entire movement of people who say, O-P, right? People who would say, I'm not going to ask permission. I'm not going to ask permission. Yes. To do the things that I need to do for my life, for my family, for my community, and I'm gonna make it look good while I do it. I'm gonna button up my high-waisted jeans. I'm gonna make it look good while I do it. That's what I'm saying. That's Howard University came to Cambridge, home place of Harriet Tubman. I am so grateful to learn about her. She married a photographer.
Oh, I am too. By the way. I love that picture of her, and I never knew her name, never knew her backstory, never knew it was anything more than just like a bystander in the crowd who looked amazing.
Oh,
so it's so good.
She's like the female Malcolm X who acted at a grassroots level and did it, didn't say it, didn't talk about it, be about it. She was about it. And so, of course, she got silenced in Black history. Of course, nobody talks about it in the history books, but we're talking about it today. And Vanessa, she married one of the photographers who came down there that day, who was enamored by her incredible, brilliant physicality and genius as a general. She married this man. They moved to New York, and she lived to be 99 years old. She just in 2021. She just passed away. And oh my God, she was active her entire life. So that is the story of Gloria Richardson. I want to know what we should be fearless about today. What should we be fearless about today? Fear not, y'all. Because if we say we love each other, and we say we love our families, and we say that we love America, what should we be fearless about? Open up the lines. Anybody on the line?
Star 9, if you have something too, by the way.
Hello, what's your name? Where are you from? What should we be fearless about?
This is Cheryl. I'm walking in Smyrna, Georgia. What we should be fearless about is using our voice. When you asked earlier what was killing our daughters, I think being compelled by systems to remain silent. Whew. On this walk and talk, I feel alive. I have acted on things that have been in my heart, but not been in my hands. Until Girl Trek, with the journey through sickness, kind of a joke for me and my family now, the battle of cancer and God's healing. And immediately after being healed, breaking my leg in four places, trying to be fearless at 63. But God knows, and I know, for the woman on this call and for our daughters, don't be silent. Use your voice, your ideas, your mind, your strength, your power, your intellect to make the change you see needed in community. Whether that's your little cul-de-sac, your street, your school, your sorority, your house, make your voice heard. I love you.
Yes.
I can't thank you enough for
love
saving
you too, sister.
My life in so many ways that I can't even share in this moment. But God bless you all, and thank you for hearing me today.
God
daughter
bless you
of
too.
Dorothy.
Yes. Yes, daughter of Dorothy, we love you too. And raise your voice. Hit star 9.
tell us what we need to be fearless about. What are the systems designed for our daughters not to succeed? What are the systems that have held us back in our lives? Raise your voice. Star nine, raise your voice. I love that as a first one. That is a first part of what we're going to do. One, we're going to say no to things that don't serve us. Two, we are going to raise our voices. What else do we need to do? Is there any, do we need to be asking permission for something? Do we need the government to help us with something? Do we need, like, what do we need? I want to hear from you. Who's next?
My name is Tamara Cosby from Queens, New York.
Yes. Hi, Tamara.
Hi. So I know you mentioned about people being like 20, any 26 year olds, you know, I'm 25. And I just wanted to speak on behalf of like the younger generation that, yes, I think we need to not be afraid to ask for help in places that we feel wouldn't help us.
Yes. Yes. First of all, Tamara, you're about to be the next Martin Luther King because you're old enough. All right? You're old enough. That's what we learned today. Number two, yes, just like Georgia Richardson, she went down. She was like, listen, Snick, we need another chapter. She was like, listen, Dr. King, I know you don't know me. I live in a little town called Cambridge, but this is what's happening there, and it ain't right, and we ain't got no job. Right? So you speak up. Don't be afraid to say no, but then ask for people's help. Ask for people's help. That's how we are fearless. That's how we fear not. Ask for, Tamara, I needed this one. Tamara, you
know, Tamara, can I ask, how did you learn about Girl Trek in this podcast?
We're trying to learn how we get more
25-year-olds.
I think it might have been during the pandemic in 2020. I don't know if it was like, I seen like a Instagram highlighting like Black businesses or so, but it was like, it was meant to be. And
yes,
I was
like
on the treadmill in the basement, walking while listening to y'all back then. So thank you.
Oh, you old school girl check, Tamara. You old school girl check, girl. Well, listen, I am so glad that you called in and that you're adding to our list of how to fear not. Ask for help.
And also,
how to fear not. Go ahead.
Not to cut you off. I'm a poet and I have a line that I said, I am unlicensed to remain in silence.
Woo! You better spit, girl. Snap, snap. I am unlicensed to remain in silence. You don't have a right to remain silent, actually. In this here fight for liberation, too many people like Gloria Richardson have put themselves on the line, y'all. Have put themselves on the line. We're going to line up two or three more callers. What I want you to do is think about if you're brave enough to raise your hand, hit in star nine. Think about if you're brave enough to say what we really need to be fearless about. Think about, we need some more voices on here and we're going to do it. But let's take two or three minutes to just ruminate on what we said. All right. Vanessa, you said you have a hard time saying no. Somebody said they had a hard time raising up their voice. Somebody said, I don't even really know how to ask for help. And that is fear. That is fear. And I want us to, in the spirit of Gloria Richardson, and in the spirit of my favorite new British rap artist, Lil Sims, I want us to walk and I want us to imagine shooting that fear down. Okay, let's play this. It's a 1 minute walking minute. Here we go.
I do what I want, I do what I like, I know what to face, I no fear, nobody, nobody. I do what I want, I do what I like, I know what to face, I no fear, nobody, nobody. Point and kill, if I want it, it's mine, you can't stop me, hey!
Family no go so far. They be fine doing proper, no lie, give me strength.
let me prosper. Daddy say you want me to be lawyer, be doctor, riff raff, kitty con, window shopper. Oh yeah, fine boy, take away auntie, bougie, ah, delay. Oh, I fancy when I see a type.
One time kill, if I born it, it's mine. You can't stop.
She said my family not gonna suffer in my lifetime. My family not gonna suffer in my lifetime. That's what she said. Open up the lines. Who's on the line? Star 9. What do we need to be fearless about? Family's not going to suffer in my lifetime. My aunt is not going to work on the floor of a factory while she's 70 years old trying to get retirement. Not in my lifetime, Vanessa.
Amen.
Not in my lifetime.
Yeah.
Good afternoon. Right, we got a sister on. We got a sister on. What's your name? Where are you calling from? Mm-hmm.
My name is Chris Norwood. I'm calling from Detroit, Michigan. And I heard the question, what's killing our daughters or our girls? And as an educator, standing in the space, watching the middle school girls, ages 12 to 14, coming to school exhausted because they're caring for their younger siblings because their mothers aren't able to be in the home like they need to be because they're trying to work to just be able to take care of their family. Watching them not come to school because they are at home taking care of younger siblings, and to see them be so defeated when they come and they're not able to keep up or catch up with the work that they're trying to navigate, and then just trying to navigate their own experiences as being a preteen. All of those things are impacting our girls, and it breaks my heart because they're just trying to literally survive, but they're actually bearing the weight that is the weight that their mothers are bearing. So it's like just this. The pressure just keeps coming down. It keeps coming down on us. Like,
yes, so, it's systemic pressure too.
It's systemic pressure, right?
Too. So it is. Yeah. So if you have overworked workers who are serving as the laborers and the backbones of a society who are chronically underpaid and overworked. Almost systemically, if you don't have two jobs, you got overtime. And if you don't have overtime, you need overtime because you ain't getting paid enough, right? So all of these things are happening. It's why we pay people well at Girl Trek. Say what you will, whatever. Whatever. It's justice.
So
it's justice. But here's the thing, Chris. Hold on. Here's the thing. The girls are holding the weight of their mothers, mm-hmm. and girls now are coming to school exhausted from caretaking responsibilities. So I think that is a powerful one. And you have something else to say? Let's wrap it up, and then we're going to get one or two more.
So what can I be fearless in? And what do I need to do to try to help these girls who are coming to my school bearing all of this weight? How do we put in systems in place so that we can do a wraparound support to provide what the parents need and to provide what these girls need when they come
to
the building?
Come on, Gloria Richardson.
Not saying it's not my problem. It's not
What's
my issue.
Do?
It's not my concern.
What's
it's not
do?
At the local. So what I'm doing is I'm making sure that when we come to school, we're talking about how do you practice self-care? How do you manage your time? What can I do for you? Oh, you're tired. You need me to go talk to the teacher because you couldn't turn in that assignment. I'm giving as much grace as our girls need to be able to move forward in life without feeling like they have to fight for everything that they need. And that's what I'm doing. That's the space that I
Yes,
have.
But
and
let
so
me
everybody
also say this. But let me also say this, Chris. Let me also say this. Chris is one of our oldest organizers. I'm also say this, Chris. We cannot just manage the injustice. We have to get at the root of the injustice. And so if you have to look at what the root causes are, is the root cause of that we cannot afford childcare? And if that is the root cause of it, you need to go and press your local government in order to provide stipends for childcare. We have friends at an organization called All Our Kin who just pressed the Biden administration to put federal funding in for child and elder care. If people get any federal dollars, well, you need to investigate that from a policy level and see, okay, I don't want my 14-year-old students babysitting until midnight. So what does childcare look like for her mother that's affordable? And start to organize the teachers around it. Go to the city council meetings, change the root causes because you're exhausted. So you can't push in more management of exhausted girls when you're exhausted. We have to get to it at the root, at the policy, at the systems level.
1,000%. Thank you. Now I know how to move forward.
All right, move forward. Go on.
And Morgan, can I even share? This is a 30-second example of how this works. My friend, who is a teacher and has three daughters, told me that she could have gotten the Biden student loan forgiveness on her $50,000 of student loan, but she was too tired to fill out the form. She said, I had the form even pulled it up, had me finished most of the thing. I just couldn't even click submit. She was just like, I was just so exhausted. And that even just shows you that, like, the level of exhaustion that we are experiencing. And then it's like, oh, now I got to show up to the bank between 3 and 5. And then I got to get across town to do it. And then I got to, like, the things that seem like small micro decisions for other people who have abundance and capacity and all the things are major decisions for Black women when you're navigating every single day a small bank of energy.
This is what I'm going to tell you, Vanessa. Exhaustion has been real since we've been in this country. It has been real since we've been in this country, and it is not a coincidence that Gloria Richardson, whose parents were well-to-do, grandparents were politicians, great-grandparents was free in slavery before the Civil War, is the middle-class person who has the capacity and bandwidth to fight. It is not a coincidence. Remember Mako, who went to college with me? Mako was the most radical one, who came from the bougiest family. You couldn't tell her nothing about Eldridge and Stokely Carmichael. You couldn't tell her nothing. She talked about the white supremacist, the business. And we just be like, girl, we tired. Because my mama was a seamstress. My daddy was a bus driver. I'm just trying to make it through college. I don't got time for this. And lower your voice before we all get kicked out. Because I got to make some money. This is what I'm telling you. So, now that we are in a position, Vanessa, where we have at least some
privilege,
some eyesight on abundance, and this is what I'm saying for every single person out here. Anybody who has found a way to take a walk in the middle of the day has some eyesight on abundance. But you know three cousins who don't. You know three cousins who can't get off the couch. You know three cousins who've been looking for a job for 4 or 5 years. You know three cousins who are in a relationship where they are stuck because they're too scared to be alone because they have no fight in them to even get on the market. That's not right. Not get on the market. I'm just saying, get in the dating game. But if you are at least moving forward, we like that 20, what did she say? She was 26. Tamara? Well, Tamara said, you don't even have a license to be silent. You are unlicensed to be silent. So I am telling every single person out there who has some bandwidth that we have to get in the game around activism and policy change to extend life expectancy for our daughters. This is the first generation that is projected to live shorter lives than their parents. We talking global warming, y'all? Do we got anybody else on the call? We'll take one more and then I'll wrap it up.
While they're coming on the call, Morgan, so she said they're coming on the call. What you said is so important because it's even what the welcome walks when we're telling women that, and they're coming back, y'all, third Saturday of July. It's like, some of you, we really got the capacity to show up and be like, come to my walk. And we got to do it when we have it because there's so many women out there who maybe on that day don't have it. And so that is like collective care for our communities, exactly in the way that you're talking about.
Yes. All right, sister, who are you and what you got to say?
Hello.
Yes, hi.
Hi. I don't want to give my name because I may have some was listening, but I thought about the question that you all asked regarding what we can do to help our younger sisters with the struggles that they're having in life. I want to say, first of all, Vanessa, you and Morgan are my heroes. You are women kings. You slay, okay? I'm so in awe of this movement. It's brought so much enrichment to my life, both physically, intellectually. I'm 71 years old, and this is the first time I've seen Black women who truly do have a heart for us, and I just thank you. I thank you too, so much, and I appreciate you. I've been around Girl Trek now since the stress protest back in, I think it was 2019. I was able to go to Colorado, and I've just been a Girl Trekker ever since. But anyway, I'm dealing with. I have a beautiful 18-year-old granddaughter and who just graduated from high school. She's beautiful. She was homecoming queen in her school. She lives in a different state. So I went down for her graduation. She's a track star. She's smart. She's made great grades. She's on her way to college, okay? And she's absolutely beautiful. But I saw that she has allowed herself to become involved with this young man who had her standing on the sidelines. As a matter of fact, as we were taking pictures after the graduation, he had all of his friends and family in his photos. And then after he finished taking all of his friends and family's photos, then he invited her to come into a photo with him. And she unzipped her graduation gown so she could show that she was wearing a mini dress underneath that. And that, his face lit up, seeing her legs and, because she has beautiful legs. And it just really just hurt my heart to see her sexualize herself almost for his attention. And it just, it just really hurt. Because like I said, she has so much talent. She's got her first year of college already paid for with some scholarships. She's done some of everything, and she's excelled so much. But she now sees herself in as somebody who has to appear sexualizing herself in order to be able to have this young man's attention. And it just really broke my heart, to be honest with you. And I just would like to know what you all might recommend I say or do in this situation. I'm her grandmother, her mother, and she has a mother and stepmom. She's my son's daughter. And so I haven't had really much success talking with them about it, because they only see all of her accomplishments and feel like, well, she's fine, everything's fine, don't say anything negative. But I just can't not feel that she's heading down a wrong path when her image is something that she wants to present in a sexualized way in order to please this guy.
I am so, first of all, I am so honored that you called, and I'm so honored that you support us. And I am so humbled that we have a forum that a woman in her 20s can call and spit some poetry, and a woman in her 70s can call with both sage advice, endorsement, and a question. Is the kind of community of Black women I have always dreamed of, and I am just honored to be a part of it with all of you. And your question is brave, and it is important. And when we talk about fear not, the fear of being alone that Vanessa started this with is so real, that no matter what your accomplishments are, no matter how much money you make, no matter how pretty your face is or nice your legs are, that somehow, some way, this society is set up, whether it is through housing laws, whether it is through the breaking up of families during the slave trade, somehow, some way, Black women be ending up alone. And it is a fear that I have. It is a fear that Vanessa has. I will speak for you, my friend. It is a fear that so many people we know have of being alone. And I think, but we have to fight that fear. It was not lost on me that Gloria Richardson divorced her first husband and fought by herself for her daughters. And then in that fight, on that path, found the love of her life, a photographer. And he saw her in her divineness. He saw her in her alignment with her greater purpose, with her God mission. He saw her in that light. And so my biggest advice to anybody out there who feels like baby girl feels, where you have to perform for the love of anybody, whether it is a man or anybody, is to find alignment with your greatest purpose and go fast in that direction, and the community will unfold at your feet. That love will unfurl on your own back, that your own wings will take root. It will take flight. That you have to walk in your purpose. I have had the great pleasure of being madly in love in my life with like absolutely the right people. And the times that I found those people were when I was in perfect alignment with God's will for my life, where I knew I was firing on all syllables. I was talking the talk, moving the move, and my face was lit up. Everything was, and then the person who was attracted to that was the person I was married to for 15 years, or the person I moved and I was in Africa with, living my best life. Like, really, that is it. And then I will tell you this, in the meantime, sister, while we are finding our way, we cannot be alone. And sometimes, as we heard earlier, we are afraid of asking for help. And so the best advice I can give you is call your granddaughter like her life depends on it. Call her every single week just to talk. In a non-judgmental listening way, because some of this is a mental health issue, right? For all of us. Some of us, we have functional depression. Some of it, we have undiagnosed grief. Some of it, we have imposter syndrome. And can't nobody afford no therapy? So sometimes what we need is somebody to listen. We are trained in mental health first aid. Sometimes what we need is someone to listen to us without judgment and just listen to us talk without prescribing, without a solution. Just listen to us talk. That's the best advice I could give for us to really be fearless when it comes to love. Vanessa, do you have any thoughts?
Well, your advice was very good. So you could clearly cheer in some teenagers. I liked that advice because I was like, ooh, what would I say? But when she first described her granddaughter, I was thinking that even at that age, especially, it's even not just a fear of being alone. It's a fear of not being desirable. Because there are so many messages telling young Black girls that who they are is not desirable. And so they're looking for every opportunity and every person to validate in every way that they could show up and shift shape so that they could be this version of desirable that they think is acceptable. And I think constantly uplifting alternative examples of Black women who were desirable in other ways, who found power in other ways, is one of those ways. And I think genuinely, not a plug of Black History Boot Camp, but like, walk with her and listen to the Grace Jones episode. Walk with her and listen to the Queen Nanny episode, or some of the episodes from like the Four Mothers edition, or like throughout this entire catalog, I think we've done a good job of giving some alternative models to women and girls in general, so that we can Rosetta Tharpe, so that we can see that there's so many different variations of what desirability can be, and so many different ways in which we can get filled up, and so many different ways in which we can love on ourselves. And we just have to give our baby girls a menu of options, and also a little grace to know at that age, the hormones is popping and all these things are going on. And so if we have that catalog though, in our mental mind, I trust that we give them a North Star, that they continuously will come back to that North Star over and over again in the times that really matter.
Thank you. Thank you all. I will. I'm going to be keeping in touch with her very often.
Please call her, because I'm telling y'all, I was just telling this to Vanessa this weekend. I was like, people don't call people. Like, I was telling her about me. I was like, my family doesn't call me because they think I'm okay. And like, my phone will not ring for a whole day sometimes. And part of that is, and Vanessa challenged me to like really make sure that I'm orienting around my own happiness and putting the effort in to build my own community and my own, you know, outside of the love and gaze of a man. And she's right. But I'm just saying, like, sometimes, and to Vanessa, to your credit, I love you so much, my sister. She called me on Sunday morning and just said, are you okay? And sometimes I think, grandmother, that's all that she needs. Sometimes just call her and say, hi, it's your grandmother. Are you okay? Do it every week. That's all therapy is.
That's right.
in a safe space that you ain't going to be judged. Yeah,
you're
a
not
space where she
judged.
Knows that
you
she
know
could talk
accountability.
To you.
Yes, and it is just, so I just recommend that for people out there. And go hard for her. It's scary calling another generation. I know it is. It's scary for me to talk to my mom. It's scary to talk to another generation, but be fearless. Be fearless like the women we have talked about and go hard in the paint for her. Go hard in the, if she stops answering the phone, keep calling. Go hard in the paint and just say, are you okay? You know? So that's all we have today, y'all. Is there, Tyreen, I don't know if it's probably, I know the lines are lit up. I know y'all got something to say. I encourage you to go onto Instagram and under the post, put your answers there in the comments. I promise you we read them. We read them, or you can email us at info@girltrek.org if you have an idea. The one thing
or
that
I have good
say,
news, Morgan, just remind them of Saturday. We're going to open the lines.
Yes, I will. I will. Is today what, Wednesday? Today's Wednesday, right? Yeah. So we are finishing up Black History Bootcamp. We have day 20 and day 21. So day 20 will be right back here tomorrow. But day 21, we are not going to do on Friday. We are going to reserve it. We are going to reserve it for Saturday. And so we're going to take a bye week, rest, take a nap for those 30 minutes on Friday. And on Saturday, we're going to come back because Vanessa has a brilliant idea that the first Saturday of each month, we're going to come on and just have Sisterhood Saturdays with you all. Boot camp or not, we're going to open up the lines, talk to y'all, walk, talk, and have fun together. And so we're going to start that by celebrating the end of this boot camp day 21 on Saturday, y'all, on Saturday. So we'll remind you again tomorrow that we'll be off on Friday, and then on Saturday we will come back to end this beautiful, beautiful time together. Gloria Richardson, teacher to your
remind
daughter.
Remind me to reintroduce myself. My name is Gloria.
But I thought about, Vanessa, there's a poet that you love, and it's not, maybe it's Octavia, no. No, it's not Octavia Butler. What are some of the poets that you love?
Lucille Clifton, Nikki Giovanni.
It's Lucille Clifton. It's Lucille Clifton. Okay. Yes. I'm pretty sure it's Lucille Clifton in this Kanye West song. I'm pretty sure it's Lucille
Clifton.
Oh,
yes, The Daybreak. Yeah.
Is it? It's The Daybreak. Okay. So I wanted to
But
end
I thought
with
that was
words.
His mother.
It might be his mother reading, but it's a Lucille Clifton poem.
Wrong. Yeah, it's Lucille Clifton. Okay, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's a Lucille Clifton poem. So we wanted to, I wanted to end with a Kanye song that just gets me fired up. That, y'all, Audre Lorde says we learned fear with our mother's milk. She said in A Litany for Survival that is better to speak knowing that we were never meant to survive. And I think that is a little nihilistic, but I always resonated with it somehow. I don't think I'm a nihilist, but I kind of resonated with it. Go hard. We wasn't even supposed to be here. It's a miracle. It is a miracle that you walk in. It's a miracle that you listen in. It's a miracle that you have a smile on your face right now. It's a miracle that you got air in your lungs. Don't you know they tried to kill us and failed? Mm-hmm. So when I think about that, I just want to go hard like Gloria Richardson. And I just think about people like Kanye, who just be putting it all out there, say what you will. I know he has not treated Black women well. I know he hasn't. But I really wanted to listen to these Lucille Clifton words, and I wanted to hear the angst of our community. Just like how Rosa Parks yesterday said, we can't throw away this young man who came in and beat me in my house, because it is the system's failure that why Kanye is acting the way he is. It is the system's failure of why Hollywood is exploiting his mental illness. It is the system's failure of why Donda in the South Side of Chicago raised her son alone. It is a system's failure. So I just want you to fear not. These systems, we can change them. Get your weight up, y'all. Black History Bootcamp 21 Pleasure Principles. Let's go out. We'll follow God. Here we go.